Welcome back, everybody, to the Deep Dive. You know, today we are tackling something that might just surprise you. We're going to do a deep dive on the I-9 form.
The I-9.
Document that you fill out when you start a new job, you know, to prove you're eligible to work in the U.S.
Right.
But here's the twist.
Okay.
What if I told you that the I-9 and all the legal fuss around it might not actually apply to as many people as we've been led to believe?
It's a fascinating question.
Yeah.
And it all starts with going back in time a little bit.
Okay.
We need to go back to 1986.
Okay.
When the Immigration Reform and Control Act was passed.
IRCA.
Okay.
Yeah. I remember hearing about that. It's a big deal, right? Aimed at tackling illegal immigration.
Exactly. It was a big deal. Aimed at tackling illegal immigration. IRCA had two main goals. First, to penalize employers who hired undocumented workers. And second, to offer amnesty to undocumented immigrants who were already living in the U.S., giving them a pathway to legal status.
So the I-9 emerged from this effort to stop employers from hiring undocumented workers. Makes sense.
That's the common understanding. The idea was to create a system where employers were responsible for verifying the legal work status of their employees.
Okay, so the I-9 was meant to ensure that everybody working in the U.S. was here legally, but you're hinting that it's more complicated than that.
Much more. The interesting part is when you examine the actual language of the law, especially 8 U.S. Code 1324A, which deals with hiring unauthorized aliens, you find some intriguing details. For instance, it uses the phrase a person or other entity.
A person or other entity. Hmm. Why is that so important?
Because the inclusion of other suggests the deliberate distinction.
Okay.
If you dig into legal definitions and principles of statutory construction.
Statutory construction.
Basically how laws are interpreted.
Right.
It seems that the law is primarily targeting government entities, not private businesses.
Hold on. So you're saying the I-9 might be more about how the government itself handles employment rather than like a blanket rule for all businesses?
That's what the language suggests.
Wow.
And it gets even more complex when you consider that the law prohibits knowingly hiring unauthorized aliens.
Right.
But the regulations state that employers cannot infer unauthorized status based on appearance or accent.
Okay, now that seems like a contradiction. How can you knowingly avoid hiring someone based on their immigration status without considering those things?
It does create a bit of a paradox, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And this further fuels the idea that the law might be more about internal government processes than regulating private businesses.
Wow, this is really making me rethink everything I thought I knew about the I-9.
Yeah.
So if the law seems to focus on government entities, why do we assume it applies to everyone?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
And it's one we'll explore further as we continue our deep dive. Welcome back to our deep dive on the I-9.
Yeah, we were just starting to dig into that phrase, a person or other entity.
Right.
And how it might suggest a different target for the I-9 than many people assume.
Right. And to understand that further,
we
need to unpack a few legal concepts.
Okay.
First, there's statutory construction.
Statutory construction.
Which essentially refers to how courts interpret the meaning of laws.
Statutory construction sounds pretty technical.
It is, but it's crucial.
Okay.
Because the way a law is worded can significantly impact its application.
Okay.
In this case, the specific inclusion of other before entity suggests a deliberate distinction.
Okay.
It implies that person and entity aren't interchangeable and that entity refers to something specific.
Okay, so the wording matters.
Yes.
What else do we need to consider?
Another relevant concept is mala prohibita.
Mala prohibita.
This refers to acts that are considered wrong because they are prohibited by law, not because they are inherently immoral.
Mala prohibita. So something isn't necessarily wrong in itself.
Right.
But it's wrong because the law says so.
Exactly.
Right.
Think of things like speeding or jaywalking.
They're not inherently evil acts.
Right.
But they're illegal because regulations make them so.
I see.
Now, how does this relate to the I-9? Well, hiring an undocumented worker is considered mala prohibita.
Okay.
It's not morally wrong to give someone a job.
Right.
But it's illegal because of the law.
I see. So we've got this law based on the concept of mala prohibita that uses specific wording to distinguish between persons and other entities. How does that all come together in relation to the I-9?
If we combine these ideas, a compelling argument emerges.
Okay.
The law, focusing on a person or other entity, and dealing with a mala prohibita offense seems to be primarily directed at government entities, which are created and designed by law.
Right.
Private businesses and individuals in this context might not fall under the same category of entity as defined by the law.
So the I-9, which was created to enforce this law, might not apply to private businesses in the way many people think.
That's the intriguing possibility we're exploring.
Wow.
Now, I know this all sounds very nuanced and technical.
And you might be wondering, why should I care about these legal intricacies?
That's a fair question.
Mm.
What's the takeaway for the average person listening to this?
It all comes down to critical thinking.
Okay.
We often accept things as they're presented without questioning the underlying assumptions.
Yeah.
But when it comes to laws and regulations, understanding the nuances can have a real impact on our lives and businesses.
So you're saying we shouldn't just blindly accept what we hear about the I-9.
Exactly.
We should question it and dig deeper.
Absolutely. If you're a business owner,
okay,
especially a small business owner who might not have a team of lawyers on retainer,
right,
you might want to explore this further.
Okay.
Research your state laws regarding employment verification.
Okay.
Remember, we focused on federal law, but state laws add another layer to this.
That's a good point. Federal law might suggest one thing, but state laws could have their own requirements. So business owners should definitely do their homework. What about employees? What should they be thinking about?
For employees, it's always good to be informed about your rights and responsibilities in the workplace.
Uh-huh.
If you have concerns about how your employer is handling employment verification, or if you feel you've been unfairly treated based on your immigration status, don't hesitate to seek legal counsel.
It's all about being proactive and advocating for yourself. Knowledge is power, as they say.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And while this deep dive isn't legal advice,
right,
it highlights the importance of staying informed and seeking professional guidance when needed.
This whole exploration of the I-9 has been fascinating. We've gone from a seemingly simple form to uncovering layers of legal complexity and historical context. It really shows how important it is to question assumptions and dig deeper.
It's been a true deep dive, and hopefully it sparked some curiosity in our listeners.
Yeah.
The I-9, for all its perceived simplicity, is a reminder that laws and regulations can be more intricate than they appear on the surface.
And as we wrap up, we want to leave you with this final thought. In a world where digital identity and verification systems are rapidly evolving, what's the future of the I-9? Will it adapt, or will it become obsolete? It's a question worth pondering as we navigate the ever-changing landscape of employment law and technology.
Indeed. And as always, keep those thinking caps on.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Mm.
We've been kind of, you know, exploring the I-9 form, its historical roots, and some surprising legal arguments about its application.
Yeah, and we've raised the possibility that the I-9 might not be the universal requirement for all businesses that many believe it to be.
Yeah. It's been a real eye-opener for me, but it's all been pretty theoretical so far.
Yep.
What are, like, the practical implications of this interpretation? What does it mean for, like, people in their everyday lives?
Well, I think, first and foremost, it encourages us to think critically about assumptions.
Okay.
You know, just because something is presented as a fact or a widespread practice doesn't mean it's necessarily accurate or legally sound.
So you're saying we shouldn't just blindly accept what we hear about the I-9?
Yeah.
We should question it and dig deeper.
Absolutely. If you're a business owner, especially a small business owner who might not have a team of lawyers on retainer,
right,
you might want to explore this further. Research your state laws regarding employment verification.
Oh, okay.
Remember, we focused on federal law, but state laws add another layer to this.
That's a good point. Federal law might suggest one thing, but state laws could have their own requirements. So business owners should definitely do their homework. What about employees? What should they be thinking about?
For employees, you know, it's always good to be informed about your rights and responsibilities in the workplace.
Right.
If you have concerns about how your employer is handling employment verification, or if you feel you've been unfairly treated based on your immigration status, you know, don't hesitate to seek legal counsel.
It's all about being proactive and advocating for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge is power, as they say.
Exactly. And while this deep dive isn't legal advice, it does highlight the importance of staying informed and seeking professional guidance when needed.
This whole exploration of the I-9 has been really fascinating. We've gone from, like, a seemingly simple form to, you know, uncovering layers of legal complexity and historical context. It really shows how important it is to question assumptions and dig deeper.
It's been a true deep dive, and hopefully it sparked some curiosity in our listeners.
Yeah, I hope so.
The I-9, for all its perceived simplicity, is a reminder that laws and regulations can be more intricate than they appear on the surface.
Yeah. And as we wrap up, you know, we want to leave you with this final thought. In a world where, you know, digital identity and verification systems are rapidly evolving, what's the future of the I-9? Will it adapt or will it become obsolete? You know, it's a question worth pondering as we navigate the ever-changing landscape of employment law and technology.
Indeed. And as always, keep those thinking caps on. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.